You are now listening to Next on Scene. Next on Scene is tomorrow's scene today, from up-and-coming products, designers, talent, musicians, celebrities, you name it, we want to showcase it. Are you next? Get Next on Scene with Jay-Z today. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Next on Scene. It is officially the weekend. We could not be more excited, and it is the beginning of June, the best time of the year, as I love the summertime. So I am so excited to have a really, really exciting guest on the line, Stephen Stone, who is a highly regarded Canadian entertainment lawyer, but probably best known as the executive producer of various Degrassi television series, and he's won many different awards and all this awesome stuff. So we're so excited to learn about his latest ventures, writing a book, and so much more than that. So today, this show is brought to us by Dymotech Cookware, the last pans you will ever need to own. They are high-quality, non-stick ceramic coating infused with Dymotech, 30% stronger than regular pans. Say goodbye to cheap, sticky colored pans and get Dymotech in classic black with jewel tone, an absolutely gorgeous look. Get Dymotech pans today at dymotechpan.com. All right, guys, I officially have Stephen Stone on the line, executive producer of Degrassi, entertainment lawyer, and a new fabulous author. Hi, Stephen, how are you today?
Hi, Jackie. Doing great. I'm looking forward to the interview.
Oh, my God. So excited to have you. And what an amazing background you have. I mean, I know our audience, especially Degrassi fans and people that have watched it for so many years like I have, it's so inspiring that, like, you now share your journey writing this whole book about it. So tell us what inspired you to write a book to begin with.
Well, you know, it sounds kind of narcissistic to write about yourself.
Okay, that's
a
good... Okay, good point.
But it was about 15 years ago that one of our directors was talking with me, and I talked about some of my early journeys with my friend Christopher Ward. This was back in the early 1970s, traveling through Europe. We had guitars with us, and we played in, you know, various nightclubs and bars and things just to make money to get along. And I was describing some of the stories. And there were some really fun stories from back then. Like, you know, we performed, even though we were Canadians, we were allowed to perform on board a U.S. destroyer.
That's cool.
It was very cool. And, you know, we were writing our own songs and sort of living the hippie kind of life. And we ended up in Ankara, Turkey, playing at the Playboy Club. And doing country and Western music. And we did that for about 8 weeks, and we had all sorts of adventures along the way. Anyway, I was telling this, you know, over a coffee with our director, and he said, oh, that would make a great film. And I thought he was joking. And, you know, it hasn't turned out to be a film, but the idea did percolate. Well, why not tell some of those stories? But as I started telling them and writing them down, I realized, you know what, this sounds like just sort of hippie adventures, but really, you know, this trip formed the basis of a life that has carried on with me as an entertainment lawyer and working with a lot of musicians, and of course working on television shows, primarily Degrassi, but a half dozen others. And it's really formed the basis for my entire career, so it's a way to tell a kind of memoir.
I love it. And I mean, the title itself speaks volumes, like whatever it takes, right?
Yes, and then the next line, because whatever it takes is the Degrassi theme song, and I helped write that theme song.
Cool.
And the next line is, so it goes, whatever it takes, I know I can make it through.
I love it.
And actually, the very first chapter in the book talks about me, and I don't dwell a lot on on my youth, but me as a young child being bullied. And the refrain sort of came back to me as I endured this, for several years. And, you know, one day I started to have a more positive outlook and said, you know what, I may be being bullied, but you know what, I'm making it through. And so that metamorphosized into the Degrassi theme song. And I thought, wow, what a great title for the book.
Wow. What an amazing backstory. Now that I, like, you know the show, to hear that is so empowering.
Yeah,
I love that.
And of course, we hope that Degrassi itself, and I hope that the book also, that empowering is a very good word to describe certainly what we're trying to do.
Mm-hmm. No, that's such a good point. What do you think, like, how has Degrassi survived through so many eras of TV? Like, how do you think that totally has evolved over time?
Well, you know, it's I give an awful lot of credit primarily to my wife, Linda, who started the series back in, it was in 1979. A young Linda Schuyler came into my office. I was just freshly minted from the bar, so a very young lawyer.
Nice.
And she had in her hand a book called Ida Makes a Movie. And the school librarian had been ordering books for her, like How to Make Films, because she wanted to be a filmmaker. And he came in one day and he said, oh, I blew it this time. This isn't about making a film. It's just a little short story about a girl who makes a film. But she read the book and she was charmed by it. And she wanted to get the rights to make it into a, you know, little $5,000 half-hour film. And I gave some of the best legal advice of my life then, which was, don't hire me. you don't need a lawyer for this. If we get lawyers involved, it's going to get all complicated, and they'll get lawyers. The book is out of print. It's a little book. Why don't you just fly down to New York, offer them $200. Here's a form of it for an assignment of all audiovisual rights. And, you know, you can do it yourself. And I didn't see her again for a number of years, but that little film became the first of The Kids of Degrassi Street. And when she changed it and, you know, upped it to a little bit older, to a more tween, preteen audience called Degrassi Junior High, she realized she needed an entertainment lawyer, and she remembered that nice young man who'd given her free legal advice. And from then on, I like to think that she's paid very dearly for that free legal advice.
I'm sure.
I became the lawyer for the show, and then starting when we brought it back as The Next Generation, we co-produced the show, and of course I've been involved as a lawyer ever since.
That's crazy. So, wow. So it has seen so many eras though, which is so amazing, because it's hard to keep TV on, right, for a certain amount of series and seasons.
Well, you know, if people do ask, and that there's many answers to the question, you know, how has Degrassi lasted for as long as it's lasted?
Mm-hmm.
And I'll give you a couple of answers. One of them, and Linda always kicks me under the table when I say this, because, you know, it rubs her the wrong way. But I actually think it's the right answer, and that is luck. I'm a great believer in luck. In the entertainment world, it's almost like a roulette wheel, whether it's a record album or a book or whatever. If it happens to hit at the right place at the right time, you know, you've hit the jackpot.
I love that outlook.
Come up on number 17.
I love it.
And, you know, you go with it.
Yeah.
Now, yes, it's true. It's true that we worked very hard. We had some great people working on it. So, you know, I don't want to discount those. But in the end, we've been very lucky, you know, a lot of the time. There's another answer, which is a little more intricate and differentiates Degrassi from other series like 90210 or Glee or Melrose.
Mm-hmm.
And those, by the way, are far more hit shows, but they haven't lasted as long. I mean, Degrassi has been around nearly 40 years.
Right.
And it happened during the early 2000s. When we brought back the show as Degrassi, The Next Generation, we had people, including, you know, people who are stars today like Drake, but then we knew him as Aubrey Graham.
Which is so funny. That's hysterical.
That's for about 5 years, we carried on. And then as the actors were getting older, we thought, well, you know, they really have to graduate. You know, unlike 90210, where you can have a 30-year-old playing a high school student, mm-hmm. Linda felt, well, you know, it just isn't realistic, because no matter how young a person looks, if they're 30 years old, they're going to bring, you know, the life awareness and the life experience of a 30-year-old to the part.
Right.
So she felt, well, we really have to graduate these kids, but we can't let them go. We need to, you know, maybe expand the show into the university years, or, you know, certainly the post high school year. And so we did that for a couple of years, and you know, we still carried on in the high school, but we followed our main characters into post high school. And the ratings started dropping. And so Linda and I, you know, looked at each other one day, and we went to the writers and we said, gang, you know, the writing is on the wall. If we carry on the way we are, we'll have had a brilliant, you know, 7-year run. And, you know, a lot of shows don't go on for 7 years. But let's not go down without a fight. I think what we've got to do is just let the actors we know and love, let them go off, and let's remember that we're a high school show. And
right.
High school is different from post-high school. In high school, there are rules. In university, if you get drunk out of your mind and don't show up at class or at school the next day because you're, you know, hungover, nobody cares.
Right.
You do that in high school, it's big news.
It's,
you know,
true.
You got attentions, you got parents, you got everything. It's a different kind of structure.
Mm-hmm.
So let's let them go off into the sunset, and we'll carry on with the young characters. And we did that, and for the first few weeks, we got all these messages from the fans, oh, this is horrible, we hate it, you know. And, you know, by about episode 4, it was like, oh, I love this character, and I love that character. They'd fallen in love with the new characters, and the ratings hit new highs. And so from then on, we've rolled with it, and even though it's very emotional, we graduate the kids and we bring in younger kids, which means you can tell similar stories, whether it's about, you know, little stories like first kisses, or, you know, embarrassing stories like first periods, or major stories like abortion. You can tell them through the eyes of a different character and with a different actor for portraying that character. And so it has a different nuance, a different meaning, a different approach.
Mm-hmm. These are all such valid points. It's so true, because you can continue the story just with different characters because they have their own experiences.
Absolutely. And
yeah.
The biggest one, and of course, and particularly in America, it's been a very, very touchy subject, is abortion.
Mm-hmm.
Back in 1987, in Degrassi Junior High, there was an abortion episode in which there were twin sisters, and one of the twins got knocked up and wanted to have an abortion. The twin sister was dead against it. And so it was an interesting way over the course of the season to explore the pros and cons and what they were going through, because you had a very balanced, you know, situation.
Mm-hmm.
And in the end, the one decided to go through with the abortion, and we saw her going up the steps towards the abortion clinic, and there was a demonstration outside she had to go through. But her sister supported her, because in the end, they were sisters, and she
right.
wanted to show support. In Canada, they showed that entire end scene. In the United States on TBS, they cut the last scene. They knew that she was going. Yes. They didn't want that final scene of showing actually going up to the steps, up through the steps of the abortion clinic.
Wow.
Well, flash forward about not quite 20 years, and our Manny character, so we're in the next generation now, again gets knocked up. Her best friend, Emma, was actually the centerpiece of Degrassi The Next Generation, because Emma was the child who was born to Spike way back in Degrassi Junior High, who had decided to keep her child. So in grade 7, Spike had gotten pregnant and had kept baby Emma.
Mm-hmm.
But when we brought back Degrassi The Next Generation, there was Emma, and it was really Emma and her cohort that we were following. Well, Manny wanted to have an abortion, but Emma, her best friend, is saying, I wouldn't be around if my mother had gotten an abortion. You can't have an abortion. So it was, again, a very balanced way of telling the story. Eventually, Manny, with her mother, we see them not only going into the clinic, but actually inside the clinic. And, you know, we see Manny making the final decision and going off to the room where she'll have the procedure. That episode, we cleared it in advance with the broadcaster, and they did not broadcast. The entire episode just ceased to exist. They paid for it, but never broadcast it. It was just too controversial.
Wow.
You know, years later, they broadcast it, but they never, you know, as part of a retrospective, but they never, you know, advertise it in advance. Well, more recently, we revisited abortion for the third time. And a young character, again, is faced with a decision. And this time, she's there, she's on her own. She goes to the clinic with a friend, and we actually go. This is one of my favorite scenes of the past 40 years. We actually go inside the procedure room. And why it's one of my favorite scenes is, it's, you know, you think of having an abortion as being, you know, maybe it's medieval or it's back alley. No, it's like going into a dentist's office.
Right.
Even less equipment. And you actually see her there, you know, in the stirrups, chatting with the doctor, a very short chat. They actually have a little banter back and forth. And then it gets serious. And she says to the doctor as he's about to perform the abortion, "Tell me, am I the first 16-year-old you've ever performed this procedure on?" And there's a long pause. And then he says, "You're not the first today." And we go to commercial. And that just shows how you can tell a different story through different actors' eyes and at different times in our social experience.
Right. Well, because everybody has different reactions, and it's so true. It'll always be different with different people.
Yes, completely.
Yeah, that's, oh my God, so fascinating. Love that whole, like, because especially through the eras, it's like so, like the word of the day is fascinating, but like to see the transformation over time of how viewership is, you know, and things that were so strict about then are so different now. Crazy stuff.
Completely different.
Yeah.
And the storytelling, how we parse out the stories is different as well.
Mm-hmm.
When I look at some of the, you know, the really early episodes back in the 1980s, man, they move slow. Get on with it. Get on
right,
with
like
it.
Get to the point already, right? Almost, yeah.
That's right.
That's so
then,
funny.
Although, ironically, it's changed a little bit. Like in the around 2010, when we were doing about 40 episodes a year. You know, you're very aware we were on network television then, and you know, you need to be keeping people's attention. You can't, you know, allow a few seconds to go by without something happening because you're afraid they'll switch the channel.
Right.
And particularly as you're leading up to commercial, you've got to do some kind of mini cliffhanger to keep people through 3.5 minutes of commercial. Well, now that we're on Netflix, and you know, the world is on Netflix, but particularly young people, it's completely different again. So you can afford to spend a little bit more time parsing out the story a little bit slower, having a bit more breathing space, particularly since the audience isn't just watching 1 half-hour episode.
Right, there are no commercials, so you're literally watching the whole thing.
You're watching 22 minutes straight.
Right.
And you're probably watching, most of them are watching all 10 episodes of the season.
1,000%. Yeah. I'm so one of those people.
And it's like, you know, if you add it up, it's like 3 hours and 40 minutes. Well, that's like a long movie. And so the pace of the storytelling has changed. You know, we're still telling stories of firsts and how, you know, our secret themes of you are not alone and you are empowered. You can make choice, but every choice has a consequence. Those are the secret themes that weave through the series. But it comes out in different ways in different time periods.
I love it. So, like, I love the synopsis. That's really, really fascinating of how all that stuff, you know, transforms over time. I love it. So, tell me, Stephen, how did you kind of fall into the world of entertainment? Like, how did this all originally, like, fall into your lap?
Well, as I tell, and, you know, the book that has just come out, called Whatever It Takes, tells a bit of the story of traveling through Europe with my friend Christopher Ward and writing songs. Well, after we got back from Europe, some of those songs ended up in the top 10 in Canada. Now, they weren't worldwide hits, but they were very, very popular in Canada. And so I thought, well, I'll be a rock star.
Why not?
Well, right? I didn't have it in me to be a rock star, but some friends and I got together and we thought, well, maybe we could make, you know, a film of some sort. And so we failed at making a film, but then we made another one, which was very good. Then we made another one, that actually was a bit better. It starred John Candy, the great comedian. He wasn't a well-known comedian at the time. It was a horror film called The Clown Murders. And that gave a little bit of a name, but we weren't making very much money. So our lawyer talked me into going to law school. But I knew when I went to law school that I wasn't going to come out and be a corporate lawyer or a courtroom lawyer or a real estate lawyer. I would be working in the entertainment world. I just wanted to be, if I wasn't going to be making music or creating things, I wanted to be the lawyer for people who were. And I've had a very blessed life. I've been able to have my cake and eat it too and create things and have the pleasure of doing that, but also help others to advance their career.
I love it. So when you fell into Degrassi, it was when you met your now wife, right? Is that really how that happened?
Yes, so that was back in 1979. So I met Linda then, and it was, I think, 7 years later that we reconnected. And I was married at the time. She had a longtime partner, Kit Hood, at the time. And so I was the lawyer for the production for a number of years. And it wasn't until the mid-1990s that things changed. And, you know, we ended up, getting together as husband and wife. And I was a partner at one of the huge law firms here in Canada. And I left that law firm and formed a small law firm. We bought a warehouse that we turned into a television studio.
So awesome.
And just started making television shows.
I love it. It's, well, like we even said, I think, I don't know if we said it on the show or even prior to the show, but like you have all different areas of the entertainment world. So you have the show, now you can, you know, protect the show from all the legal standpoints, you know, and now you have a book to tell the story about how it even all began, which I think is so awesome.
Yeah. Well, you know, part of the book, secretly, the book does tell a lot of stories and hopefully interesting and funny stories and also very self-deprecating because I've gone through a lot of failures.
Of course.
I've failed more than my fair share of times.
Right, and you were even talking about like bullying earlier. Like these are real things that happen, and I think it's so amazing and inspiring that you are sharing it openly, you know?
Yeah, well, I think we have to these days.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, bullying, we've told stories about it on Degrassi, but, we live in a world where, you know, with the Harvey Weinsteins of the world, I mean, bullying is a major issue that we need to shine a light on.
It's so true. It is so true. And how does Degrassi fit into the Me Too movement? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I look at Me Too, and I'm sensitive about talking about Me Too because, you know, as a male and a white male, I tread tenderly on the territory.
Right, totally understandable.
But what I do think is that Me Too is about primarily about sexual harassment. But to me, sexual harassment is a subset of a greater evil, or a great evil, or a larger evil, let's put it that way, which is bullying.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you think of Harvey Weinstein, yes, it's sexual harassment, but it's harassment. It's forcing people into situations where he was using his own power to get people to do things that they didn't want to do.
And
in
right.
this case, it was sexual things. But, you know, so often, you know, we've got school shootings happening now, and so often that involves bullying behavior as a kind of a trigger point. You know, people sometimes ask what my favorite episode of Degrassi is of all time. And I've got many favorites, and in fact, I usually answer. I try not to answer, and I say, "Well, episodes are like children. You're not
right. They're all different."
That's right. But back in 2004, we did an episode called "Time Stands Still," which was the culmination of about a year and a half's worth of storytelling, a long story arc. In it, there is a boy named Rick who is a bully. And he bullies his girlfriend, or he abuses his girlfriend, pushes her down, and she's actually hurt. She hits her head on a rock and has to go to hospital. So he's expelled from Degrassi. The next year, she's gone off to another school. He comes back. He is now the one who is bullied. And so we examine, you know, the different facets of, you know, sometimes the bully becomes the bullied, and vice versa. And in telling that story, we flew up to Canada from Columbine, from Littleton, Colorado, which is where the Columbine High School was located. Mm-hmm. Barbara Coloroso, who is a, you know, an expert in this bullying area, and wrote the book *The Bully, the Bullied, and the Bystander*, which was essentially about the Columbine shooting. And she was extraordinarily helpful with our writers in terms of talking about this, because the story ended with, you know, the character Rick, who had been a bully and now was bullied. He reaches a point where he's just vindicating himself. He's won a contest. He's now the hero of the school, and then they pull a prank on him, and he's utterly humiliated. And he goes home, and he brings a gun to school. And, you know, it was very important to us to tell the story realistically, not sensationalizing it, mm-hmm. but so that you actually, in many ways, could have sympathy with everybody involved. But because everybody was involved, not just the bully, not just the bullied, but the bystanders, everyone right. was involved in creating the dysfunctional situation.
Mm-hmm.
In the end, he died in a struggle. He was shot in a struggle, but not before he had shot the character Jimmy, who ended up in a wheelchair for the rest of his life. Jimmy, of course, was played by Aubrey Graham, now better known by his middle name, Drake. From 2004 on to 2008, you know, Drake played the character Jimmy, but from a wheelchair. So there was a huge long character arc, and we really studied this whole notion of bullying. Well, your question was, just to remind us where we started this, how does Degrassi fit into the Me Too movement?
Mm-hmm.
And I think in some ways we think of Degrassi as a 40-year anti-bullying message. Because whether it was that school shooting episode, which really opened our eyes to, and our writers' eyes to, you know, a lot of the nuances, it's not all just black and white of bullying and bullying behavior and the dysfunctional situation. But, you know, if somebody is gay and they're being, you know, attacked outside, or somebody is a Syrian refugee and looks different and is being attacked for that, there's just so many ways that other people can bully, and of course, cyberbullying. You know, we've seen it now with, you know, the latest instance, and I don't think people would call it part of the Me Too movement, but Roseanne Barr just, you know, tweeting
it's
very hurtful,
exactly,
very,
it's
very
right.
hurtful thing. And that is bullying.
Mm-hmm.
So to answer your question, I think that's how Degrassi fits in. It's not by taking a stand on Me Too itself. It's by really trying to reinforce that the danger of bullying and the importance of shining a light on instances of bullying and making it transparent.
Right.
Not just to those directly involved, but to those surrounding them and who may, in a sense, be enabling and supporting the environment.
No, it completely makes sense. And I think that totally attests to why the show has been so successful for so many years, too, because it's a relatable topic and there's nothing to hide from it. You're just showing real things that occur, you know, and how what goes on through not just the victim or anyone else involved, like real things that trigger even the situation to begin with, right? So,
yeah,
no, that's really inspiring stuff. So on a happier note, Stephen, I want to play some Game Time so our audience can get to know you outside of your awesome career. But this is like what you would like to do in your free time. You can answer them however you want. Okay, there's no right or wrong answer. So first question, what is something you have to do in your daily routine?
What I have to do, I wake up at 6:30 in the morning, and I have to because we have two wonderful Scottish Fold cats. Whose names are Boris and Natasha.
I love it.
Anyway, Boris and wake me up. We walk into the kitchen.
And they make you give them breakfast.
Get a cup of coffee and read the morning paper. and then do a few exercises. So that's something I do every day, and they won't let me not do it because they start purring and pawing at me at about 6:30.
Oh my God, that's so adorable. I love it. So they're really, the pets are part of your family. They really are. They're your kids, right?
Oh, they completely are. And I don't know if you know what Scottish Folds are. They're the same cats that Taylor Swift has. And the reason that we got them is we have a country place. They are great travelers. Taylor Swift takes her two Scottish Fold cats wherever she goes. And we take ours, we put them in the car, and they just flop over asleep and wake up when we get to our country place.
Oh, my God. That's adorable. Oh, my God, I love it. Yeah. I'm such an animal person, so, like, I can totally relate to all things pets. I love it. Okay, cool. So that sounds like a traditional thing you have to do every morning. Good stuff.
Yeah.
And your babies are a part of them. That's good. So next question. What is yours, being in the TV world for so many years, what is your TV guilty pleasure?
You know, let me just think about that. First of all, I'm a sports fan. So
okay.
I'm not sure that this is a guilty pleasure.
Okay.
I've watched our Toronto Blue Jays from the early days when they started, the Toronto Maple Leafs, who haven't won a Stanley Cup. The last time, I'm old enough now, I'm 70, I just had my 70th birthday.
Oh, happy birthday.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah.
Back in 1967, so how many years is that? That's over 50 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Was the last time the Leafs won the, and of course, so Canadian hockey is everything. And I was there, I wasn't in the arena, I was watching on television when the Leafs won the Stanley Cup, and they haven't since then, but I've been a diehard fan ever since, so I guess I'll call that my...
Your guilty pleasure. Love it. That's a good one. That's a really good one. Okay, if you were stranded on a desert island, what would be one item you have to bring with you and why?
Well, first of all, my hero, the one thing I couldn't bring, which is one of the favorite things in my life, of course, would be my iPhone.
Right.
But I hope it's a desert island that has Wi-Fi.
Right, exactly. That would be a good thing.
I think I have to go into rehab, and I'm joking about it, but I'm also being partly serious. I'm on my phone. I'm on my phone right now.
That's a good point. Like, right, what do you do without technology in your phone? It's so crazy, but that is the world of today.
I play games on it. I follow Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. I'm always reading news articles, and yeah, at some point I've got to get off. I've got to get to that desert island, but the one that doesn't have a Wi-Fi connection.
That's so. So when you and your wife go away, like, what's your getaway? Where do you guys enjoy going?
We like going. So normally we're shooting during the summertime.
Makes sense.
We don't generally get away in the summertime. My wife's birthday is in February, so we like getting away then and getting down to the Caribbean.
Awesome.
And yes, and actually there, to be honest, I don't spend a lot of time on my phone.
Good. So you can cut off there. Well, that's a desert, I guess, kind of a deserted island, right, on some level?
Yes. I'm not good, by the way. I've got one of those complexions that I just go beet red if I'm in the sun for too long, no matter how much, SPF 70 I put on.
Right.
So so I like sitting in the shade or, walking or restaurants and things like that. But my wife loves flying in the sun.
You guys balance each other. Happy medium, right?
Yes. That is so true. Actually, that brings up a point I think one of the reasons that working together has worked so well, everybody knows, because we very often disagree with each other. On the show on Degrassi, she'll have one point of view. It should be the red dress, and I'll be thinking, it should be the blue dress. But we're very open about it, and, we're very accommodating. I mean, the goal is to get the right color dress or whatever it is. Hopefully it's something more important than that. But everybody knows that we disagree with each other. So there's no point in somebody agreeing with Stephen and being a yes man and saying, oh, yes, Stephen's right, because then they'd be disagreeing with Linda.
Right.
So they might as
right.
well just actually speak up and say, I think the polka dot dress is the way to go, and here's why. And you just make a decision and move on. So I think that's when one of the secrets of our managerial success is actually because we are different and do come at it from different points
of view.
Yeah. That in the people we work with.
Love that. That's a really good like analogy and analysis of even like marriage in general. That's like very important stuff right there. Good stuff.
Yeah, to be able to be different and yet make that a strength. There's probably a lot that America and Canada can learn about that, and Democrats and Republicans can learn about that.
Really good points, definitely. Where do you guys shoot Degrassi, by the way? Do you guys move around? Where are you? Is it in Toronto?
It's in Toronto. In the early Degrassi, it was shot on location in two different schools in Toronto.
Cool.
But since the year 2000, we've been shooting it. We bought this. We didn't know what we were doing, but we bought this, and I tell the story in the book. We avoided buying one warehouse that turned out, we think, was owned by the KGB, because it had a huge satellite dish in the center of it, and a friend of mine who works in what is Canada's equivalent of the CIA.
Oh, my God.
Gave me sort of the word of who was actually the owner of the building. But we ended up buying another building, and over the years, converting it into a television studio. And so we built the exterior facade that looks like a school and the gym inside and all the various classrooms and the interior sets, which are people's houses. But then in the back parking lot, which we now call the back lot, we built a swimming pool, which is now the Hollingsworth set, and a series of streets with storefronts or residential fronts, which is where we shoot the exteriors.
So fascinating. I love hearing the pieces that put the big picture together, all the details.
Oh yeah. Have you ever been to say Universal in Los Angeles or done one of the studio tours where you go behind the scenes?
Yes.
Well, our studio was they've got a whole bunch of different lots. This is where they shot such and such. This is where they shot this movie. Ours is like one of those lots. They might have 40 of them. Ours is only one, but it's a very big one, and it's actually the only one in Canada. All the other studios in Canada, people go in there, they shoot, and then they tear it down. We just leave our set standing.
So smart. I mean, it's pretty awesome that you can do so much with that one space too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, big, like, turnovers, like, for changing scenes or moving sites. It's, like, it's pretty awesome. You could do it all in one area instead of keep relocating,
right?
You
can do it in one area, and there's one street where we have these huge green screens on either end of the street. And so, you show a car running down, and, we bring in, let's say we're pretending we're in New York, we bring in some yellow cabs to be, in the real space and doing, but then in the distance, we have a crew go down to New York and shoot a New York street, and we match it so it looks like you're on this big New York street or a Paris street or just a local Toronto street.
That's so amazing. Green screens are so cool. I find that stuff so awesome.
And it's used far more often than you would think. A lot of the shows that you see on television, you think, oh yeah, they're just shooting that on location. No, they're probably using green screen.
Right. That these are so valid points. That is so cool, though, at the same time. Mm-hmm. So awesome.
Oh, really cool.
Yeah.
I'm a nerd, by the way. You can tell by my answer wanting the phone around me. I drive an electric car. I love the technology. When we moved from shooting on film to shooting on video cameras and everything that goes on behind the scene and the sound and manipulating the picture. I love all that stuff.
Well, why wouldn't you? There's just constant new stuff, right?
Yeah.
They just come out with technology is just incredible. Like, it's really amazing the things they come up with, even like daily. It's insane.
Well, yes. And the trick then is, and we've made this error in the past and we've learned from it, is not to let the technology overwhelm. And the example I use, and for a while we were seriously considering doing some shooting in 3D. Because remember a few years ago, everyone was saying, oh, 3D is the next big thing. Everybody's going to have 3D television set.
Right.
Well, I did a lot of research on it, and I looked into it, and I saw concerts shot in 3D and things like that. And I thought, but you know what? people are going to get caught up in, you know, sitting there and the 3D that's happening. Really what we want them involved with is not the 3D aspect. It's, we want them to be so caught up because the story itself is so compelling. We don't
right.
want to draw them away from that. And so sometimes technology, you can get caught up in the technology and it actually pulls you out of the story. And what we sometimes have to temper ourselves back and say, no, we don't want to do any tricks and gimmicks. We want to have people just so totally in the story, they're there in their own mind and they don't need any tricks to get them there.
Right. But I think that still brings people back to reality too on some level, right? I think that does that too.
Yeah.
All valid points. Well, Stephen, it has been such a pleasure to have you today. Tell everybody how they can get your book and how they can follow you on social media.
Yes. Well, first of all, Stephen Stone is a weird spelling. Well, Stephen is not that weird. It's S-T-E-P-H-E-N. But sometimes some people spell it with a V, but no, it's with a P-H. Stone is the weird spelling. It's S-T-O-H-N. And probably the easiest is it should be in a local bookstore. But the easiest is to go to you know, whether it's Amazon or if you've got, you know, Kobo's or Nooks or, you know, electronic devices, you can go to Barnes & Noble, any of the digital outlets. But Amazon is a good first place to go because they can ship it to you digitally or physically and probably get it to you the same day.
Right, seriously.
I know, Amazon Prime, it just amazes me.
It does. It so does. I can't get over too. Like even within hours now, you can get it.
Yes. Yeah.
Blows my mind.
There's some places where you can get where you get it within 2 hours.
Yeah. Okay. Seriously, it's crazy.
I can't believe it.
I know. The luxury of local technology, especially when like the when their distributors are near you, that's when they're able to do that.
Yes. Yeah.
So cool. So how can everyone follow you on social media, like your Instagram and stuff like that?
It's all, like the Twitter is at Stephen Stone, so just all one word. And again, S-T-E-P-H-E-N-S-T-O-H-N. The Facebook, the Instagram, it's all, facebook.com/Stephen Stone. Instagram is at Stephen Stone. And there's actually a small website which talks about the book called at stephenstone.ca. It's not .com, it's .ca, which stands for Canada. And again, all one word, Stephen Stone.
Awesome. Well, Stephen, thanks again so much for coming on today. It was such a pleasure to have you and so inspiring.
Well, it was wonderful chatting with you, Jackie. There were great questions.
Thank you.
Yeah, really an excellent conversation.
Yeah, it was so much fun. And everybody definitely needs to be sure to check out Stephen's latest book with Christopher, his bestie for 50 years, right? That's how long you guys have known each other and been friends.
That's right.
Amazing. Yeah, that is very awesome.
Yeah. And it's called Whatever It Takes.
Yes, definitely check it out today and get social with Stephen on social media and stay tuned for who's next on scene. Today the show is brought to you by Dymotech Cookware. These are the last pans you will ever need to own. Say goodbye to cheap, sticky colored pans and get Dymotech Cookware in classic black with jewel tone. It is absolutely a gorgeous look. Get it today at dymotechpan.com. Thanks so much for tuning in to Next on Scene. Are you next? We want to hear from you. Get in touch with us at getseen@jzsocialenterprises.com. Get social with us at JZ Social Enterprises on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And are you next? Don't forget, we want to hear from you. Stay tuned for who's next on Scene.